Blog Talk Radio.
America is essentially a dream. It is the dream of a land where men of all races, of all nationalities, and of all creeds can live together as brothers. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Here we go.
Greetings, just Freedom Radio listeners. This is your host, Jamal Brown. Today is Monday, July 25th. Your Black History Fact of the Day is Emmett Lewis Till, whose life was taken by an example of the worst manifestation of racism. Today is not the day he died. However, this is the day that we celebrate his birth. He was born in the state of Illinois in the year 1941. We have a show for you today with a individual who was a part of the Fantastic Black History Tour that just wrapped up last week. From what I understand, the tour was absolutely fantastic. Everyone on the tour was inspired, uplifted, encouraged, and most of all, educated about little-known facts in African-American history. Many of the individuals who are on the tour are actually from the state of Florida, where the tour was conducted, and they were surprised to hear about all of the information, all of the facts that are in their very own backyard. We'll be speaking with an individual here shortly. Her name is Miss Angela Wright. Miss Wright, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Fantastic, fantastic. Please tell me how it is that you came to be on the tour.
Well, I received an email from Sherry Dupree. I guess I happened to be on her email list because I think it was 2 years ago, I had her come out to my school for a Black History Month program.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result of involved with the Black History Month program, she had my name on her email. So I got the email about the trip, and I actually just thought it was a tour for everybody, but I later realized it was actually a tour for educators and administrators and people with groups who wanted to take, you know, who wanted to go and learn about bringing the education into the curriculum.
Right.
I didn't realize in the beginning that it wasn't for children, but I just wanted to take my grandkids.
Got it. So you speak of your grandkids. How many of your grandchildren were able to make the trip with you?
I took six of them.
Wow, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What's the age ranges of the children that were able to attend with you, your grandchildren?
There was a 16, a 15, 11, a 12, 4-year-old. Did I say 14?
Got it. How much was the trip per person? And I guess if you don't mind me asking, how much was your investment in this? I call it an investment, not a cost or a fee, but an investment in their future with this
information. It was $150 per person, and that was a steal because we stayed in the most fabulous hotels. And I mean, and we were treated like royalty when we got to the various hotels, and we were at 5-star hotels. So
that's awesome.
This is the way we can't even complain about a cost.
That's awesome. I was able to see some of the photos on our show's producer Leslie Gist. Gets to Freedom Radio. I was able to see some of the photos of the trip on her Facebook page, and then definitely the photos confirm what you just said. The hotels look nice, seem fabulous, pools, and look like they really rolled out the red carpet for you all. Tell me, how long was the trip?
We left the Sunday, and we started in Innisbrook, and we ended the Friday in Orlando. Mm-hmm.
Got it. Now tell me, what were some of the highlights for you on the trip? Some things that you hadn't known before, or just something that you got a new perspective on? Again, what was that thing that sort of sparked something inside of you that made you say, I'm going to take this away with me and, you know, share it with others?
I enjoyed Sylvia Fry did a transatlantic PowerPoint where she broke down how the slaves actually came, and I pretty much knew the history and whatnot, but it was nice seeing her PowerPoint and the various pictures that she had, even in the West Indies. I am from the West Indies, and so, you know, it was interesting seeing that, you know, like they spoke about Barbados and, you know, and the trade that took place there and whatnot, and so coming from, you know, the Caribbean, it's interesting, you know, seeing what took place there. So Sylvia Fry did a really nice, she has a really nice PowerPoint, and I enjoyed that. And then the Harriet and Harry Moore, you know, actually being there and seeing, you know, how these people were blown up just because they were good people doing good things, you know, registering people to vote, you know, running the NAACP. And it's so sad, you know, it's sad to see what people went through back then. And I guess what sparks interest in me, too, for wanting to know more is what I realized. I came to America in the 1960s. We came 1960 with my mother and my siblings. And when I hear about Black history and what took place here, I'm like, well, where were we? How come we didn't know what was going on with this whole civil rights movement thing? And I guess apparently my mother coming up from the West Indies and moving to Brooklyn, she just probably just had no idea what was going on, you know. And it's like, wow, you know, when I hear about the different things that took place, and I was like, wow, why weren't we involved in this? Why didn't we go on some marches or whatever? And so it's like she didn't know, you know.
Wow. Tell me, what are some highlights that you heard from your grandchildren? Any special stories or any takeaways that stand out in your mind from them?
They enjoyed St. Augustine. They asked you, one thing that was very interesting was we went to St. Augustine and they went on the, we went to that, what was that called? The Foot Soldiers. There's a new memorial for the foot soldiers, and it just so happened that when we got there, the foot soldiers were being recognized with their memorial. And there was also Andrew Young memorial where they actually have his footprints, and you walk on his footprints.
Wow.
And ironically, when we came home that Friday, their grandfather came down from Atlanta to pick them up, and we shared, you know, like some of what the kids did and saw. And he mentioned to me that he swims in the Y with Andrew Young in Atlanta, the Y that is named after Andrew Young. And he basically said that he sits in the partner with Andrew Young, and Andrew Young, who's now 81 years old, shares some of the his history with him.
First hand. That must be awesome.
Wow, it's like this thing is coming full circle.
That's pretty awesome. I had an opportunity to listen to an interview that you did with our show's producer, and I heard the part where your granddaughter was, you know, pretty emotionally taken aback by some of the things that she saw and experienced, and has decided to become a history teacher. Did I hear that part correctly?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
She was Angela, I don't remember Angela's last name, but Angela did the young lady named Angela did another PowerPoint about slavery today, you know, the slave trade, and as well as the fruit pickers and the vegetable pickers and whatnot, and these different people who are going through slavery today that not a lot of people are talking about. And she was also moved very much by that, and she said she wanted to go back to her school and get involved with that. I think the acronym for that program was called FAST. I don't remember what exactly the acronym stood for, but it's about ending today's slavery.
Yeah, we interviewed the person who was over that, and, yeah, I remember that as well. Students Against Slavery, against the slave system, if I'm not mistaken, Students Against Something, but yeah, after-school program that they have that's doing some pretty good things with regards to that. From what I understand, tell me a little bit more about the Harry Moore Museum. I actually had an opportunity to do some research on Harry and Harriet Moore, those two stalwarts there in Florida who were getting people to vote. And, you know, they were so good at what they did, people decided to kill them. From what I understand, they, in the state of Florida, were able to register more black people to vote than all of the southern states combined at one time. If you could just shine a little bit more light on your experience there at the Moore Museum.
Yeah, I guess they had a lot of folks angry with all the people that they were registering to vote. So when we went to the museum, there was a PowerPoint again, and so we saw the PowerPoint that told their story, and we also were able to exhibit the home that they lived in, a neat little home. And it was sad. One of the things that really touched your heart is when you hear that when they blew that bomb up underneath their bedroom, that their bodies actually left an imprint on the ceiling. You know?
Oh, my.
That's how bad it was, and that is sad. You know, here these people are living their little life and living a good life, and because you're living a good life and you're doing a good thing, you know, there's evil people out there that's, you know, going to come against you. It's just really sad.
Wow.
They have a wonderful fountain that they also have there at the Harry Moore Museum. There's a fountain that keeps going and going. You know, it's very nice.
Got it. Now, that imprint, that was a photo, or that's what someone said, or you actually saw this with your eyes?
No, they told it when they told the story, when we heard the story. No, they didn't. They don't have it up there on the ceiling.
I was about to say, I don't know if I wanted to see that.
Yeah, no, that would be too much, yeah. But, but the imprint was there on the ceiling, I guess, with blood and whatever, as they went up there and hit the ceiling.
That's amazing. I want to hear more about your grandchildren. I hear that they, you know, say grandma's the family griot or the family historian. Tell me how you got that reputation.
let's see. I guess, junior high school, I've been doing African dancing.
Okay.
We had programs at our school in Brooklyn. We had John F. Kennedy. I guess after they killed John F. Kennedy Center, they wanted to do something for the black community. So they started the John F. Kennedy Center, and I started African dancing and being exposed to different dance. And then in East New York, you know, we had a great teacher, Carl Alexander. and but he passed away now. And we also had Chuck Davis, who went on to do bigger things, but he was one of our teachers too at another school. But they would come and teach us, you know, African dancing. And then later on, I went to a high school where I went to Prospect Heights, and our principal was always bringing in musicians and cultural stuff and actors, and she did a good job. That was Gertrude Cohen. She did a good job of bringing in a lot of black actors and performers and exposing us there, you know. And then later on, I went to Mega Evers. That was well after the kids were growing up. I went to Mega Evers, and when you go to a black college, you know, they give you a lot of history and expose you to stuff. And my I actually had my children involved in a program called Legamec that was taking place at Mega Evers at that time. That was Pandora Hopkins. She was running a program called Legamec, and she even had a guy come over from Trinidad that was teaching steel drum, and I had my children taking the steel drum.
What is Legamec?
It was a woman named Pandora, and she had a group called Legamec, and what they had going on was they were doing plays, because my children were in the plays, and she was exposing the kids to cultural stuff, and like I said, the steel drum, and it was like an after-school music and cultural stuff. But they ended it, I think, by the time the new president had come in the early 90s, they actually stopped that program.
Right. Yeah. So you passed on and exposed your children to the history, and then they in turn gave it to their children? Is that a summary of it all?
And my daughter, five of the children that I had, my daughter Garland is an educator. As a matter of fact, she's that founding principal for that JCP Johnson College Prep up in Chicago. The one that was named after Johnson and John Johnson and his wife, the Rice, was recognized for on the BET Honors Award.
Mm-hmm,
so my
mm-hmm,
daughter
yeah.
is an educator, and she's big on education, and I believe in exposing the children to everything positive that you can expose the children to. And basically that's with them, and I emailed my daughter and told her about this trip, you know, and I said the kids were coming to Florida, and I said if the kids are coming to Florida, I think this would be a great thing for the kids to do, but I didn't realize that it really wasn't a trip for kids, but Sherry was so graceful that she allowed the children to go on the trip, because she said, well, this would be good because then the children can give us feedback. You know?
Right. You mentioned a few names. You mentioned a few names as you were talking. I didn't want to interrupt. But you mentioned Medgar Evers College. Tell us a little about Medgar Evers for those in the listening audience who may not be familiar with him and what he was able to accomplish.
Well, Medgar Evers was another, I believe he was an NAACP leader, and he was another one that they killed pretty similar to Harry Moore. And the interesting thing, when I did attend Mega Evers for the short time that I did attend there, what's his name? Wife was working there, the other leader, Malcolm X's wife.
Betty Shabazz?
She was working. Yeah, when I went to Mega Evers, she was working there in one
wow.
of the courses. And it was interesting seeing her, you know, like they would say, you know, that's Malcolm X's wife, that's Malcolm X's wife, you know, and I just remember her being this very pleasant lady that was always smiling. And I know that she and Mega Evers' wife and Martin's wife were all good friends, you know. Because they basically were the widows of these great leaders. But you asked me about Mega Evers. I remember he was shot down in his I think, on his porch.
Front yard, yeah, front yard. Again, he was another one like Harry and Harriet Moore who just was outstanding at what he did, and people, you know, didn't like that. So a gentleman, Bartholomew de la Costa, if I'm not mistaken, hopefully I'm not getting that name incorrect, a gentleman with KKK ties, as you mentioned, yes, shot him with a high-powered rifle from across the street and killed him on, he fell dead on the front steps of his home. And the interesting caveat about the gentleman, he was able to be free for over three decades. Took 3 decades for the police to convict him. Finally, he went to jail and died a few years later after living a full life, not in prison, again, went to prison and died, you know, shortly thereafter. Yeah, just a side note.
It's really unfortunate when you hear about what really took place in the South. You know, and that's the other thing, growing up in Brooklyn, you know, I guess we dealt with racism in our own little way, like in school where they played favorites with who they wanted to play favorites with, mm-hmm. you know, when it came time to get awards and whatnot, where somebody black may have deserved something and you didn't get it because a little white girl got it or a little white boy got it. But that, I think, and I another racism thing we dealt with was when we moved to East New York, we was one of the first black families that moved in there. And before you knew it, boy, they were running like roaches to get away. And as a matter of fact, my parents bought a home, and we had a white family living downstairs. And I guess they just didn't like the idea that a black family bought this house. These people moved out in the middle of the night without my mother even knowing that they moved out. It wasn't until one of her neighbors said to her, I don't think there's any movement down there. I don't think anybody's down there. And she had to go into the apartment to find out that those people moved out. I guess it was an insult to them that a black person bought this home. But other than that, we didn't deal with the ugly racism that the people dealt with in the South, you know?
On a daily basis. Now, I heard that you have a unique skill that most grandmothers do not have. I heard that you actually rap. Is that true?
I won't say I'm a rapper. I'm not a rapper. No. What happened is, while I was attending Mega Evers, they had a conference. They had this big storytelling and writers conference where they brought talent in from all over. They brought them in from all over the country. They brought them in from the West. People came from the West Indies. And I remember even some coming from Africa, because the same woman, Pandora, I remember she brought somebody over from Africa. So they came from all over. And this conference went on for about a week. But, you know, the saddest thing about that conference was whoever was supposed to let the public know about this thing, I think they did a terrible job, because some nights I would be in there with my children and just a handful of people would be there. And I'm like, wow, who was in charge of public relations? Because the people that should have been there was not there. But I was there faithfully. I was faithful, and my kids. I mean, sometimes we were going home 1 o'clock in the morning because I was not missing anything. And one of those late nights that I was there, a young lady performed by the name of Sharon Jordan, and she sang this African-American history rap. And as I said before, it's in that book, Talk That Talk. I think Linda Gross is one of the writers. It's an anthology of black writers and storytellers. That was the book they were selling at that time. And I heard Sharon Jordan sing this rap, and you know when you hear something and it's like, oh my word, I love that. I gotta go learn that. So I went and I purchased one of the books. I turned to that page and I learned that rap because I just thought it was the best thing I heard, and I've learned it. And when I relocated to Gainesville, I was working at a little Christian school, Family Worship Christian Center in Gainesville, and I started to teach it to the kids down there, you know. And places I go, different schools, I'll teach it or I'll perform it at Black History Month program. But what was so funny was about a year or two ago, my daughter Googled Sharon Jordan's name, and she said to me, she said, "Ma, you know that lady song you're singing? Do you know this lady from High Springs, which is like 20 minutes from me in Alachua?"
Okay.
I said, "What?" I said, "What? She's from here?" But Sharon Jordan, I believe she lives in Buffalo, New York, and she's doing a lot of cultural stuff up there, and she's a retired librarian, I believe. And I just thought that that was so funny that here I brought her song down to Gainesville, and I'm teaching it to people in Gainesville, and I'm passing it on to other educators to teach it to their children. And she's actually from High Springs, which is right here in Alachua County. I said, wow, this thing came full circle.
Certainly, certainly. Two things. What was the name of that book that you mentioned?
It's Talk That Talk. As a matter of fact, I'm going to walk right in my living room and get it. Yeah, you can go ahead and talk. It's Talk That Talk, and let me...
Talk That Talk, okay.
Yeah, and I think that rap was on page 254. I never forgot that. Yes, it's edited. Okay, let me read it. I'm in the dark. Turn on the light. Yeah, the book is Talk That Talk. It says, an anthology of African-American storytelling edited by Linda Goss, that G-O-S-S, and Marion E. Bonds.
Okay.
Right. This is with an introduction by Henry Louis Gates, Jr.
Awesome,
yeah, and
awesome.
It's a neat little story. As a matter of fact, most of the people that performed at that conference in the, I believe that was 1990s, is actually in this book.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the name Henry Louis Gates. Remind us, or let us in the listening audience who may not know who he is, who was Henry Louis Gates?
They said that he has an introductory in here. I can't off the top of my head, the name rings a bell, but I cannot tell you off the top of my head.
No problem. If I understand, he's a professor at one of those Ivy League schools. Princeton is in my mind, but it might not be Princeton. One of the Ivy League schools. He's a cultural commentator. He speaks on a number of issues. He was actually in the news a year or two ago when he turned.
That was the guy he was breaking into his own house.
He got arrested more or less for breaking into his own house. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, it's like it just dawned on me. When you started talking, I'm like, is that the one that they arrested him for breaking? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he also did a fantastic show. He's somewhat controversial. Some people in the Black community love what he does. Some others say that he doesn't take a strong enough stance on the things that he talks about. I will reserve my opinion, but one thing I will speak on, I have a series that he did where he traces the genealogy of some famous people through DNA testing and is able to trace their lineage all the way back to Africa. Some individuals like Chris Tucker, rather, Oprah, and a number of other ones. And Chris Tucker even went back to Africa where it was found that his people were from. And, so that's one thing he did. But, Miss Wright, you have me on the edge of my seat dying to hear this rap. I must admit, I've never heard a grandmother rap before. And if you don't mind, I would love to hear this rap.
I will share that. But I did see that that program you're talking about where he did trace those people genealogy. I did happen to see this. Okay. All right. I have a little drum. When Sharon Jordan did this, she used that little shaking, that little African shake thing.
Uh-huh.
The gourd, but I could never seem to get my rhythm going with that. So
okay.
I tend to do a little beat on the drum. So
Miss Wright, I have to admit,
comes back to memory.
Got it. We have about a minute left. I seem to throw this in there. I don't even think I can make a beat on the table. You know, and I'm a Generation Xer, so I just wanted to give you kudos for that before I even hear the rap. But go ahead.
All right. I said A, B, C, D, E, F, G, African-American history. I said a H, I, J, K, L, M, N, P, African-American history. Q, R, S, T, U, V, African-American history. W, X, Y, and Z. This is a story all about me. This is a story all about me. A for African-American, my true identity. B for Benjamin Banneker, surveyor of Washington, D.C. C for my community, a place that I call home. D for all discoveries I made just on my own. E for education we use from day to day. F for all the families and the love that they portray. G for all the talents and gifts of those who entertain. H for the writer Hughes and Hurston, who wrote about the people of Plains. I said A, B, C, D, E, F, G. African American history. I said H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. African American history. Q, R, S, D, U, V. African American history. W, X, Y, and Z. This is a story all about me. This is a story all about me. I for rhythm, blues, and jazz, and all our instruments. J for Jesse Jackson, who ran for president. K for Martin Luther King, we honor with a holiday. L for the cowboy Nat Love, Bedwood Dick they say. M for Madam C.J. Walker, a black woman millionaire. N for the prophet Nat Turner, a freedom fighter who did. O for oppression that we must fight to keep our struggle alive. And P for the principle some have held that fills our heart with pride. Q for the questions that I ask about my history. R for our religion, Islam to Christianity. I said A, B, C, D, E, F, G. African American history. I said H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. African American history. Q, R, S, T, U, V. African American history. W, X, Y, and Z. This is a story all about me. This is a story all about me. S for the 7 days of Kwanzaa celebration. T for Harriet Tubman, conductor of the Freedom Station. U for the Underground Railroad, a secret passageway. And V for the values that keeps me strong, from unity to faith I pray. W for Whitson Carter, a vision he did see when he proclaimed February for Black History. X for the name that Malcolm took because it means unknown, and Y for you to be all that you can from the first day that you are born. Z for zenith, the highest point in this universe. You're reaching up when you learn an African-American history verse. I said A, B, C, D, E, F, G, African-American history. I said H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, African-American history. Q, R, F, T, U, V, African-American history. W, X, Y, and Z. This is a story all about me. This is a story all about me. This is a story all about me. Big rap.
Wow, wow, wow. That is amazing. What sort of feedback do you get from individuals when they hear that for the first time? Because I'm speechless right now. I need a few moments to gather my thoughts. So just what sort of feedback do you normally get?
Everybody loves it. And I usually print out copies of it because I know people's going to want to know, where did you get that, you know? But I do make it my business to give Sharon Jordan her props. Because, you know, some people think it's something I made up. I'm like, no. This is a lady named Sharon Jordan, you know. Mm. Yeah, so I try to pass it out as much as I can. And people are amazed, and they love it. And then so I give it to them, and then they take it on and teach it to other people.
That is beautiful. Is it online anywhere that you're aware of, or do you have the lyrics?
Not that I'm aware of. I know it's on talk. It's in the book, Talk the Talk, and Talk That Talk, and I think that was page 254 from my memory. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. We've actually had the opportunity to extend the show another 10 minutes. Are you okay with that on your time?
That's
on your
fine
end?
With me.
Okay, fantastic. You mentioned a whole lot of names in the rap. Who are some of your favorites, your giants in history that stand out to you?
as far as Black history?
That's correct, yes. There's people who have, you know, made major contributions that have made an impact on you and just affected your thinking and your life.
To tell you the truth, I would say my grandmother, Ina Chandler.
Okay.
Like, we did, that's number one. We, you know, I had a grandmother that was a storyteller, and she has influenced me largely. It's like we took her for granted, you know. She told stories, and, you know, when storytelling began to come famous, in the, I guess, the late 80s or whenever, and all of a sudden everybody was talking about the Anansi stories and all this type of stuff, I'm going in the back of my mind, my grandmother did that. My grandmother did the stuff that now they're making a big deal of, you know, and then she passed it down to her daughter, Sheila, who also passed it down to her kids. And another thing that influenced me greatly with my grandmother is I remember my grandmother always, like, playing with us. You know, where sometimes people like to separate the adults from the children, my grandmother used to do a lot of ring games with us, like play games with us. Like, we had one called Bessie Down and Lost My Glove on a Saturday Night. And she didn't send the children to play among just the children, but she actually came out and she played with us. And I remember this joy in my heart with this adult playing with you, you know? And so she passed that down to me so that when I get the opportunity, I play with the kids. I'm with the kids. I'm enjoying the kids, you know? I'm not separating myself from the children. So my grandmother, Ina Chandler, as much as we didn't realize the greatness that we had in our lives and took us for granted, even in the area of cooking, this woman prepared everything from delicacies to foods to drinks to candies. And again, we took it for granted that, you know, the things that she made, and she really was a positive influence in the family. And as a matter of fact, quite a few of her children and great-grandchildren have become chefs and cooks because of this great cook that she was, you know. So mm-hmm. as far as that, I got to give her props. And then I guess looking at one of the places we went, which was Bethune-Cookman College, looking at that woman, Mary McLeod Bethune, who started a school with $1.50 and five little girls, that is a wonderful, you know, that is truly somebody to acknowledge, and she's truly one of my heroes.
And of course, you're speaking of Bethune-Cookman College there in Daytona, Florida.
Yeah, that was amazing, and that she went with her heart, you know, she went with her heart and $1.50. As a matter of fact, there's an emblem there that I saw on the school, and it says head, heart, and hand. And that's one of the emblems. And I'm like, mm-hmm. wow, you know, I'm amazed with that, you know, because I'm out in the Hawthorne area, the Hawthorne-Johnson area, and there's a woman out there, Marie McLeod, and she is working and putting a little program together for the kids in the community and trying to work with these kids and enlighten them. As a matter of fact, one of our goals is to take some of these kids out there on future trips like this. And we have a handful of people out there in that community that do exactly what that emblem says. We work with our heart, our hands, and our head, and we're just, you know, trying to do this. And so for me, when I saw that on the trip, that was something that stood out to me because I'm like, oh, my God, you know, that's us. You know, mm-hmm, we're trying mm-hmm. to make a difference and trying to enlighten these kids, because I'm going to tell you something. These kids do not know their history. They don't know, and it's really sad. And I just thank God for the opportunity that I've got because of my experience and the places I have been and people I have met. I know a little bit of something, something, where there are some people, kids and people, grown people, they know the name Martin Luther King, but they
and
don't really
it.
Know. They don't
right.
know the story. And then everybody right. has this negative thing with Malcolm X where they don't know the story. And, you know, I just thank God, like, I have daughters that make my grandchildren sit down and watch Emmett Till movies, sit down and watch Roots, sit down and watch all these different black history movies that enlighten these children on what took place. But unfortunately, we're in a society where a lot of times when you mention cultural something or Africa or history, these kids, it's so negative. Like, oh, I don't want to do no black history, or I don't want to do that, because somehow there's some negative connotation that they hear Africa or black history and they don't want to identify. But you know what? I come to realize the white man, he did a hell of a damage. He really damaged. You know, a lot of times you hear people saying, well, how come the Asians and this and that could come over here and they can be so productive, and why can't the blacks get together? Well, I tell you what I have observed for myself working in Florida, in the rural area, I see the damage. These people mm-hmm. have been damaged. That's why they are so damaged. They are so ashamed of their black selves. And some of them are so black and beautiful. And when I say black and beautiful, I mean they're so dark-skinned and beautiful. But you'll hear them say things like, oh, you blacker than me, you black, who's black, and this one's black, and they're all, the thing is, they're all dark. They're all charcoal dark.
Right.
But they're so busy trying to compare who's a little lighter than who, and you know, and it's like, and all I could do is shake my head and say, wow, they are
right.
so damaged. And then you hear statements like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, she's cute, but she's black. You know, it's like, what is that? You know, it's like, it's so unfortunate that our own black people can't see the beauty in themselves. But it,
right.
And the irony is the white man sees the beauty. The white man sees the beauty. You know, we're here in Gainesville at the University of Florida, and being at a university, you will have a lot of performers coming in from Africa and everywhere. And what amazes me, a lot of times, when you go to the different performances where these different people are coming over from Africa to perform,
mm-hmm.
99% of the audience is white. And
right.
they are enjoying the music and the incitement, and they're getting into it. It's like they're getting the Holy Ghost in the audience to this black music. And in my mind, I'm like, where are the black people? You know, why aren't the black people at this performance, you know? It's like, but it's like somehow we black people here are shunning our own black history, black culture. You know, it's sad. It's like a damage have truly been done. Somebody did a number on black America. They really did a number. So I don't look down on the black Americans and say, oh, they could be doing a lot more, because what I realize is, wow, they really damaged them. This is such a self-hatred. It's really sad. These people have truly been damaged.
Right. I appreciate everything you just said, and I'm in total agreement. We have about a minute left. I just want to go back to the rap real quick and hear real brief from you. What is your favorite line in the rap, if you have one?
Benjamin Banneker, that man was the surveyor of Washington, D.C., because I think what happened, he was working with someone who was supposed to actually do it, and that
mm-hmm.
person quit and left. But Benjamin Banneker, who also was the first person to make a clock, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, he actually, by memory, remembered exactly where everything was supposed to go, all these buildings in Washington, D.C., and it's so ironic that somebody gave me a book the other day, and I was reading the book, and it was Benjamin Banneker, a book written about Benjamin Banneker's mother. It's like a kid's book, and it's something Banneke, and come to realize in the ending, that book is about Benjamin Banneker's family, and it was so amazing that someone gave me that book. As a matter of fact, I'm about to grab it off the shelf right now, and that was so amazing. Just coincidentally, a coworker said to me, "Hey, Angela, I think you might like this book or something. It's called Molly Banneke." This book is called Molly Banneke, and is written by Alice McGill. And ironically, Alice
Molly, is that spelled M-A-L-I?
M-O-L-L-Y,
okay.
Banneke was the name of the book, written by Alice McGill. And believe it or not, Alice McGill was one of the performers at Mega Evers. She was one of the best of the best.
You have a lot of interesting connections and interweaving that's taking place. Something's going on with you. Aside from being the grandmother who raps, you have some other special connections going on there.
I'm telling y'all, another person to look up is that Alice McGill, because I'm going to tell you what, when I left that Mega Evers.
Could you spell that last name for us, please?
Alice, M-C-G-I-L-L. That's
got
Alice
it.
McGill. This book is written by Alice McGill, and it's called Molly Banneke. And in the end, and you learn that one of her children or grandchildren turned out to be Benjamin Banneke. And the pictures are by Chris Sopiet, I think, Sopiet. But I'm telling you, Alice McGill performed at Mega Evers at that conference. She was so great. I had to buy her album as well as her cookbook. She wrote the best cookbook I ever put my hands on. You know how most of these cookbooks have ingredients that you never heard of in your life, and you're like, well,
right.
What is that?
Right.
Alice McGill wrote the most simplest and best cookbook I ever put my hand on, and she had an album. Back then we had albums. She had the album with her storytelling, with the Anansi stories and all of that, and I'm telling you, I used to play that, and my children and I, we used to crack up.
That sounds beautiful. That sounds beautiful. Unfortunately,
yeah.
We have run to the end of our show. This has truly been one of my favorite shows. Again, I would have to admit, even I, a Generation Xer, cannot keep a steady beat on a table like you did. And so I definitely appreciate that and appreciate you for sharing that rap. And just hearing the stories of this fantastic trip that you went on truly sounds inspiring. I hope that I can save up my pennies, nickels, quarters, and dimes and make that next year's trip, because the way that you described it made it sound like it was something truly, truly a sight to behold.
It was. We saw so much. We saw so much that you actually have to now sit back and reflect.
Reflect, yeah.
Because it was so much information. Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Ms. Mike, I would like to thank you again for joining us. Again, it's truly been a pleasure. And do you have any last words that you'd like to share with us in the listening audience?
Well, I thank you for having me, and I thank Sherry Dupree for tolerating me and six grandchildren on her trip. But like I said, it didn't originate with something for children, but she allowed us to come, and I appreciate her allowing them that experience so that they got the exposure that they got.
Awesome. Well, that's right. Thank you once again, and you enjoy the rest of your day.
Okie dokie.
All right. And I'd say thank you for those in the listening audience. We'll be back at you soon.
Okay, thank you.
Grandma hands clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma hands played a tambourine so well. Grandma hands used to issue out a warning. She'd say, "Billy, don't you run so fast. Might fall on a piece of glass. Might be snakes there in that grass." Grandma hands. Local unwed mother. Grandma's hand used to ache sometimes and swell. really love that man. Put yourself in Jesus' hands, Grandma. Heaven, I'll